Have we started? Is this the start? Is this the beginning?
You know, it should begin at some point, I hope. I mean, not yet, but now. Now.
Mm-hmm.
Someday we should do Spaceballs.
That would be... That movie has things in it that are memorable as opposed to this movie.
Yes, yes. You know, as much as you might complain about Star Trek stuff, I have to say that this movie is like such a dud. Like I can't even. For the people who are just listening to playlists and or maybe navigating on the internet through some sort of device that doesn't allow them to see what is happening, we are talking about Wing Commander, released in 1999, an amazing disaster of a film, ill-advised on every level. It is closely associated with the creator of the series, of the popular video games, but somehow manages to completely miss everything about the popular video games that people actually enjoyed, and created some sort of weird World War II space movie, full of, you know, teenagers who are in space, being, well, although they're not really teenagers, like age wise, I would say that they're emotionally teenagers, but there they are. And then, you know, you got actors from other things who can do a better job, assuming they were given better material. We've got, you know, the wonderful David Warner to kick off the beginning of the film after some stuff. We'll talk about the thing. But, you know,
he's the guy who stood very still and still stared just over the camera.
Yes, yeah. That's David Warner. He's good in other things, you know, Time Bandits, Star Trek 5, Star Trek 6, Gal Morrett, there are four lights, that whole thing. Anyway, you might have heard something about that on the Twitters, but he's good at things and other things, very other things, not this thing. And you know, you got all your other things like Jürgen Prochnow. He's in things. He's in this. He showed up to be angry. even Mark Hamill is in this as a computer voice.
Oh, is that what voice he was? I saw him listed as voice.
Yeah, the voice of Merlin, the computer who was garbly and Skypey, even though, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's an internal internet relay that conveys it from one side of the Rapier fighter to the other. But anyway, he's all garbled and weird, and he's in the film. And then you got... people like, you know, I can't even say his name. I think it's Checky Caro? Cario? Cario?
Mm-hmm.
Cario?
I've seen him in things before.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it starts to, there's a steep drop off.
I like the captain guy, the bald headed captain guy, who basically, it looks like they hired him just because they couldn't get the actual guy from Starship Troopers to be in it.
Michael Ironside?
Yeah.
Is that who you're thinking of? Yeah,
there you go. They wanted Ironside, but they went with this guy.
I would say that this guy's disposition is a little rosier. And you also have Saffron Burroughs and...
That's the name of an actor that is in this movie.
Yes, and Jenny Holder, who do a good job with the few things that they are given to do, and overact in a couple places, but... Not as horrible as the sharp drop off where we go down to Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze Jr.
I was going to say, Jenny Holder had to pretend to be sexually attracted to Matthew Lillard. So that's, I mean, tall task right there.
Yeah, especially with the peroxided bleached hair.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Ugh, such a, it's not, maybe that's what they saw on one another. Says hair tips. But
you think that when they hire Freddie Prinze Jr. for jobs, that like part of his contract just stipulates that there has to be a role for Matthew Lillard too?
I don't know, but isn't it amazing that they went on to do two Scooby-Doo movies together after this?
Mm-hmm. And he's in She's All That as well with him.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That movie is bad, but also way, way better than this movie.
I think there are a lot of bad movies that are better than this movie. I was initially hesitant to discuss this at some point. I can't remember when the conversation initially came up, but I was just like, no, it won't even be fun to make fun of. Like, it's such a terrible movie, such a waste of time. And then today it was like, well, you need to record something. What's short? And here we are.
Yeah, I would like to state for the record that you were right. This is not, there's nothing to make fun of. I mean, there's a couple things to make fun of, but I mean,
not as many as you would hope.
If they had like done a thing and then you could like point fingers at them and go like, look at them trying to do this thing. How bad was that thing? That would be fun. But this is just, there are sounds and there are images moving around and stuff is apparently happening, but you can't, there's no discernible direction for anything. It's just overacting in places and bad acting. And then like, well, we have to have a lot of scenes to fill out this movie where people are standing around talking to each other because, you know, we've got a small budget. We can't do a ton of like actually actiony space stuff. And then it's over mostly. And then there's a kiss and stuff and then like zoom out on stretcher and then credits.
Yes. And theme music.
And then there's these weird undertones, yeah. Which I guess, I don't know. I guess I can kind of imagine how this would work as a video game, but there's this creepy weird undertone about people who are like half of a different race or something. He's half pilgrim, which I think is kind of hilarious because pilgrim. He's half human, half pilgrim, and everyone's all racist against pilgrims and stuff.
Yeah, everyone is related to people that the Duke would make fun of. It's a cinema joke.
It's John Wayne, yeah.
Yes.
He called people pilgrim.
Yeah, he
but
did.
He meant it more affectionate than they do in this movie.
Yeah, more affectionately than Jürgen Prochnow. But so the thing here is apparently that was not part of the game.
The pilgrims weren't part of the game.
No. Apparently they had not come over on the space Mayflower at this point. So that wasn't a thing. So, and again, this is one of those things where it's just very strange because this is a story by credit and then directed by credit for Chris Roberts, who made the game, the first game, and then was involved in producing the second game and then like left to go do his own thing. And there were successive games afterwards, Wing Commander 3 and 4, before this movie was released. And so, I don't know, you just kind of like, well, what did this have to do with anything? You're just like making up weird things now. Like I could see some of it if it was like a director who was attached to some video game property to produce that didn't have any like strong connection to it and was just going to like totally wing it and do whatever it is that they wanted to do. Or even if it was somebody who was strongly connected to it, they might have like wanted to flesh it out more and invent their own things and put their own stamp on it or whatever. But this is sort of like, I already wrote this stuff and now I'll just rewrite everything and make it weird and not interesting and overly complicated because that really didn't need to be part of it to have that in there. Remember Titan A.D., where a character also like had a heritage about a thing that he had a destiny and was like special for some reason. same sort of dealio with the Fresh Prince here, Freddie Prince. He's somehow
he's the chosen special one. He knows how to. It's genetically coded in him to read magnetic fields with his brain and stuff, so he doesn't need a navigational computer, because all a navigational computer really is just trying to replicate the brain power of a pilgrim who could explore space without computers because they were space pilgrims.
Isn't make a lick of sense.
But you know, they need a pilgrim. They need somebody. They need a chosen one who can read the magnetic field, so they can he can fly into the quasar and use the jump coordinates to jump to the other side of the thing and give the thing to the other people and then jump back without a computer because he didn't have a computer for some reason. Computer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's the Neo. He's I mean, basically, he's this he's this ridiculous archetype of a hero who is found in some podunk place, or he's working under at some menial level, but he's secretly deep down inside, he's a really special guy, and so he's got that going on. And the really special thing is just kind of dumb and doesn't make any sense. And
it only comes back into play in the last like 5 minutes of the movie.
Well, I mean, it's right there.
He's just being stupid.
Well, it's at the beginning of the film, and then it's at the end of the film, and it really doesn't. It's not clearly communicated how this is like really a thing or why it really matters. But that's kind of how the rest of the movie is.
He's
about
just really
stuff.
Good at typing numbers in really fast on his phone keypad in his thing, because the computers can't navigate through the quasars because the gravity is too strong for the computers.
Yeah, well, they're not calibrated because they're only designed to simulate a pilgrim. It's really dumb. The whole explanation that they give to Cario, Commodore James Paladin Taggart, who we'll get into his triple weird. I'm not who you think I am thing at some point, but yeah, I mean, he's basically in charge of all of our pilgrim exposition, and Freddie Prinze's mom was a pilgrim and his dad was in the Confederation. He fought alongside the Confederation, so he's of two worlds, man. And it's like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but what we do learn is that all pilgrims get, I guess when you're born, they issue you this large necklace thing, which also like pops out
the cross,
like a sick thing.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
And people wear it, but they like try to hide it, but they don't hide it very well because it's a necklace and you can see people are wearing necklaces.
Yeah, well, also it's like, I don't know, it's for Flavor Flav. Like it's not a small thing.
It's got to be big enough that you can yank it off your neck and throw it at somebody and be like, here, take it. It's yours now. Take it.
You could knock someone out with this thing. It is not petite. So
maybe that's how the pilgrims explored and conquered all these different places. They used them like brass knuckles, like in their fist, to punch aliens in the face.
Yeah. Every time I watch this, I'm just like, please don't let this be a key to some ancient pilgrim device that will save everyone by the end
of
the film.
It totally
looks
like the thing in The Fifth Element that they used to open the temple.
Yeah, I couldn't deal with that. This is the only cliche they didn't actually poach there.
Well, he probably didn't think of it.
Yeah, well, they were like 2 seconds away from it, I'm sure. But
take it out and like it would go into the Kilrathi ship and be like, oh wow, it's an alien like skeleton key, and now I can control their ship and stuff or something.
Doesn't make any sense. All right, so let's start with the beginning of the film.
But no, before we do that. Oh. You said every time you see this movie. How many times have you seen this?
Twice.
Okay, that's too many.
Once in theaters, and then
you
once
saw
today.
This in theaters. Why?
Because it was supposed to be cool when it was initially released, and it wasn't.
Did it just have like a really enticing trailer? Or did like your friends say it was good, or what?
It was a space movie, Dan.
It took place in space, and it had Freddie Prinze Jr.
I've seen worse space movies, but. Not many.
Name a worse space movie than this.
Supernova.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Yeah, well, that's... There you go. So you got that. Now, that's one to grow on there, Dan.
Name another one. Let's see if I know another one that's worse than this.
Oh God, what was the name of it with Hulk Hogan? Was it Suburban Commando, where he's like an alien or something, and they're like alien bounty hunters after him? Anyway, it was stupid. That one's also worse, because without saying, just by that description I provided to you. And then let's see, what else do we got with space? Hellraiser 4. That had space, because why not? At some point, you just have to do that, because I think Leprechaun also had one in space as well, but I didn't see that.
Did you just see any movie that had space in it?
Well, I mean, at some point with these horror films, they're just like, let's just throw them in outer space. We ran out of ideas. I mean, look at all the other ones that happened, like Jason X. Remember that movie?
No, I never saw it, but did that take place in space?
I saw part of it on TV that also took place in space. And they froze Jason cryogenically or something. And then I'm confused on the thing, but whatever. He wound up in outer space. And then they came across him and thawed him out. And then he went around the ship killing people. So
that seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, it seems like a very bad idea. And it had two of the people from Andromeda, which was a syndicated television series from Canada, on at the time. So that, you know, not to besmirch syndicated Canadian television
that's different than the Andromeda Strain, right?
That's very different from the Andromeda Strain. The Andromeda Strain has epilepsy in it as a major plot point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
anyway, there's a spoiler alert for the Andromeda Strain.
Also, what it was, the alcoholism.
Yes, that is also important.
Mm-hmm.
Let's readjust our pH levels here, and we'll return to this bad space movie, where it starts with one of the laziest ways you can start a movie. You just tell the audience things via voiceover.
It's the guy looking at the computer, and then he like goes to take a pee or something, and then everyone attacks and blows them all up.
No, that happens after the voiceover.
What happened in the voiceover? I forget.
In the opening credits, when they have the radio stuff.
Oh,
where
sure. Then you could call that a
Kennedy
voiceover
in the space program, and yeah,
yeah, because there's the bit of dialogue that they stole from later in the movie, where Matthew Lillard's like, "Oh God, they're coming right for us," and then there's an explosion sound.
Yeah, and then, and this is when they went into space, and we've been colonizing, blah, 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 voiceover news bits. And it's just like, who's getting old-timey radio news? Like, anyway, it doesn't make any sense. But yes, apparently.
We came across some race, and we wanted to be friends, but they don't want to be friends, so we're at war.
Yeah. And that is another thing that bothers me about this film. I don't know if it's better in games or anything, but... to say that there is no depth to the Kilrathi might be insulting the word depth, because there is nothing. It is a one dimensional surface here. I don't get it.
They're space cats.
They're space cats.
Giant space cats.
They're angry.
Giant angry space. Green angry space cats that have fog machines in their spaceships.
Yes, they're very angry, and they're gonna blow up things. Gosh darn it. That's what they're here for.
Cats are all about chaos. They'll just knock things off tables, and you know, they do what they want.
What they really needed to do was build a giant cat tree in space, and then all the ships would be too distracted.
And just fire a bunch of what's the stuff that gets the cats all high?
Catnip.
Catnip. Fire a bunch of catnip at them.
Yeah. Yes, Dan. Mm-hmm. But
space catnip.
Space catnip. So anyway, the beginning of this movie starts with the Pegasus base, and we pass over it, and then we go into the thing, and blah 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 blah. Inside there is a guy who's supposed to be monitoring his 3D radar, and then he decides to go take his space piss, and
his egg-shaped 3D radar.
It's very strange. I guess they have some sort of misshapen space radar dish or something. But he gets up to go to the bathroom, and this causes their base to be destroyed. I am suspicious of that. That doesn't really seem like a good plan to protect yourself. Is like one guy who looks at a screen, and if he doesn't look at the screen, then you're doomed. That's like some like Lost Vault entering numbers BS. I don't understand the point of that. They could have just as easily started the film without that, and just like some base was attacked, but they don't. And then they also have the whole thing here where they have to they're after the Navicomputer AI, and it's just like, okay, well, this is another technobabble thing you've just dumped on us that we don't understand and can't relate to, but sure, go ahead, explain.
It's kind of like, didn't they do that in one of the new Star Trek movies where they needed like a passphrase to get past like the Earth shields or whatever or something?
I think you're thinking of Spaceballs again. It's the same kind of password an idiot would have in his luggage. But
they need the computer because in order to get to Earth, they need a code to get past an Earth shield or something. Or it's like
it's not a code to get past anything. It's just like the, it has coordinates.
They don't know where Earth is because maybe we moved it or something. So yeah, they need directions. Apparently, maps are top secret in the future. 2650 something.
Yeah, but if you're not like interacting with anyone who would give them maps, then I could see how that would be a secret, because that would be hard to figure out otherwise, since they jump from place to place.
Just capture one of the enemy ships, then put a Find My iPhone on it.
Well, yeah, that's what they could do. They could put a homing beacon on things. That would be a way. But this is also another way where you steal their home address from their accountant or something. I don't know.
They stole the little black space book with all their addresses in it.
Yeah, this is exactly what it's like when your database servers are compromised and your passwords and a home address get out. And you know, then Evernote sends you some email about how you got to reset your password.
Yeah. While they're all getting attacked or whatever, they hit like the eject button to like fire their thing out into space. Was it the computer that they were trying to protect that they fired out into space?
No, Dan. That was a warning that this was happening.
Right. Okay. I was under the impression that they fired the computer thing out to protect it, but
no, that's the computer thing you see at the end of the film.
Right. It was in their spaceship, and at that point when I saw it, I'm like, oh, I guess they intercepted it somewhere or something. So why did they not just put the thing in the thing? Oh, because he was trying to like shoot the glass with the thing, but they had bulletproof glass.
The self-destruct failed on the thing, so they couldn't blow up the coordinate computer thing, and so then they tried to shoot it and he couldn't do it, and then the door was
glass.
Yeah, and so then they fired off the warning beacon that they had been compromised and they were going to get the special computer. And then the knock on the door, it's the Kilrathi, although you don't see them yet. And the computer, the drone goes off into space, and then Admiral Tolwyn and his people find that drone and get that message. The computer goes into the Kilrathi's hands at this point in the film, and they have it until the end of the film, where there's that command ship, command and communication ship. But the thing here is that they make some reference to how the thing's malfunctioning and it doesn't work, and their accusations about sabotage. Like, I don't know, did it just like break, or was there actually a saboteur? Like, it's very strange.
Remotely hacking them and preventing them from deleting their cloud backup or whatever. I couldn't, like, how do you not have access to a self-destruct? Like, of all the things, it has one function. You push a button and it blows up. Like, I don't know how you stop that.
I don't know. You make it selfless. You give it some aspirational goals.
Just like not have a self-destruct, and they're like, oh no, they're here. We don't have time to hide it or destroy it.
Yeah, it's really ineffective. I don't really think that this does a good job of explaining the universe that you're in, the peril that your characters will fall into, any of that. I think it's just stuff blows up and you get techno babble. And then we go to
doors and the self-destruct doesn't blow up, but it's a computer that sits out on a little pedestal in a glass room.
That's to keep people from messing with it, except until they get in there with their things that can mess with it, I guess. So the message is received by Admiral Tolwyn, and it's all like, Pegasus has been destroyed. And he's like, oh, crap. Well, let's get out there. And then there's this whole convoluted scene that unfolds here where it's like, we're this many hours away from this thing, and they're this many hours away from that thing, and we're over here at this many hours, and they're 2 hours ahead of us. It could come down to the span of 2 hours.
I didn't understand a lick of it. Not a lick of it.
Yeah, It is. I couldn't diagram this conversation for you.
I kind of sort of got that. Like, we can only radio so far because we're like damaged or something, and these are the only people who are within radio distance. So call them, and then tell them to call the other guys or whatever. But then after that, it's like they got to get to a jump spot because now they have the computer, and the computer will tell them how to get to Earth. So you have to delay them hitting the jump thing by 2 hours so we can get there too, so they don't do the thing and get to the Earth and stuff.
It is a mess. Like, it is just a disastrous mess here.
All we know is they got to get the thing. They got to get the info to the people because the space cats are coming, and if they get to Earth, everyone's going to die.
Yeah, there's a ticking clock, which... I guess is a ticking clock. It just in terms of a dramatic instrument, I could see why you would want to have something like that there, but it doesn't actually exist because you didn't manifest it. Instead, we just get this weird thing where they got to communicate with the other ship.
It's a ticking clock in as much as it involves time, and yeah. time is on the screen.
Descriptions of time.
Descriptions of time.
And so then they have to contact this ship that's taking replacement fighter pilots to another ship that is outside of the radio range, but it's a civilian ship. So they need to contact a military person on board. So they contact Freddie Prinze Jr., who's on board, because they know he's there, and they know they know everyone who was on the ship. But they don't contact the super secret undercover spy who could actually do something. They contact Freddie Prinze Jr. Because the guy fought alongside his dad in the Pilgrim Wars. It's just like, oh my god, what is the point of this?
The Pilgrim Wars is pretty good. Nobody said begun the Pilgrim Wars have.
Oh god.
Is that where those hats come from? Like, is it some sort of like future pilgrim hat that doesn't quite have like a metal buckle on it, but it could?
Which hat? What?
The military hats. Like, whoever was doing production design was like, they're in the military. They should have like the space equivalent of sailor hats. So we'll give them these weird round sort of beanie things that don't go down very far on their head and have this big thing around the outside.
Oh yeah, I just thought those were space beanies. They do this weird thing where they walk the line between submarine and air combat, World War II style. It is very peculiar.
Nobody make a sound because the spaceship above us will be able to hear it, even though not how vacuums work at all.
No. Yeah, I mean, I was just waiting for somebody to say one ping only, but they didn't.
It did. They were doing a sonar thing too, where you could hear the beeps as they were getting closer. It's like, guys, no air in space. Sonar doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. No air in this movie either. But so they get word to Freddie Prinze, and he's all like, "Oh, I got my special." My special little Sony disc now, the little
the Mission
CD,
Impossible floppy.
Yeah, the optical storage, magneto optical discs. Mm-hmm. So he's got that to hold on to.
Even though didn't they call it a computer chip or something?
Yeah, he calls it an encrypted computer chip, and I'm just like, that's not what that is. But whatever, I don't really care. So they are gonna go fly to the thing, and the guy's like, oh well, I know a special shortcut by taking Beacon 157. And it's just like, I don't know what that is. And it's like, nobody's...
Starts to get weird, and then you think there's going to be some sort of like deeper explanation to it, which there kind of sort of is like way later, but mostly it's just to add like stuff for people to do and things for people to yell, because like, he's going to take the shortcut through the thing, and then Matthew Lillard goes too fast, and he's like, no, if you go too fast through the special thing, you'll get sucked into the black hole quasar, which is not a black hole. He calls it something else. So you can't go too fast or whatever.
Gravity well.
Yeah, the gravity well. And then he's got to navigate it. And then like stuff like the computer goes offline. And oh no, they're going to get sucked into the gravity well, because how do you navigate the gravity well without a computer? And then there's sparks and stuff flying everywhere. And he's got to run in the back and start messing with server circuit boards or what have you to get the computer back. But they didn't need it all along, because Freddie Prinze jumps into the driver's seat and starts dialing phone numbers on the keypad really, really fast, because he's a pilgrim and he can feel the gravity well things, and He can fly through things.
That's dumb. It's so just really dumb. Because it doesn't make any sense. Like, even if he successfully was able to plot some sort of a course, how would it possibly be the course they needed? Because
he can feel the gravity grooves in the well.
Yeah, he can feel the gravity groove that takes them right over to the place they need to go. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. Like, he doesn't know anything about the other place. It's not even like, oh, well, he's been there, so he can get a feel of it. Like, he has no clue.
Well, like, it's just like even if you're going to like try to be all metaphysical. He can feel the metaphysical lines on the highway, even though he doesn't really know where the road goes. I don't know. But then,
makes me so grumpy.
I love that Matthew Lillard, his role in this is, aside from just basically being Matthew Lillard, just to say things about what it was like back at the Academy. Remember the Academy, capital T, capital A, the Academy, where there's totally a backstory for these characters, not just like, you know, people in outfits on a spaceship.
It's like a less fun Starship Troopers.
Less fun Starship Troopers.
Way less fun. You took all the fun out of Starship Troopers and you get this movie.
I mean, at least the bad guys in Starship Troopers were like scary looking. And here it's just giant, like buff space cats in metal armor.
It doesn't even matter that they're not that scary looking. It's just they're also not that threatening. Because like later on when we finally get their point of view... they turn out to be like complete morons. So it's just
they basically kind of undermines just act like humans. They're space cats. They're humans in space cat outfits.
Literally and figuratively. I have objections to the end of this film, but we'll get to it. The thing here is that once they finally jump through the thing and they show up at the place and it's like, oh wow, you did it, pilgrim stuff, and then they land on the ship and the guys are like, oh, the thing, well, why didn't Pegasus call us? And it's like, Pegasus was destroyed. Here, I have my encrypted chip. And he hands it to the guy, and then it's like there's no encryption thing that they know, and they just like give it to the techs, and it's just, they gotta like what, work out a back door to get into this? It doesn't make any sense.
I like how the guys on this ship who know each other really well, he calls his buddy communication, like, hey, communication guy, decrypt this post haste. Like, well, he probably has a name, you probably know him because you hang out with him all the time, but it's cool.
I get the feeling that everybody in this universe has like one job that they're supposed to do. Like, even when he finally gets the computer to play back the thing, it says beginning playback before it even starts playing. It's just like, wouldn't you just play the video? Like, what is that?
It's very important that you follow the procedure, just like on a movie set, you say roll camera and the camera guy goes rolling. Well, he doesn't say rolling, but
you need some downtime here, because you got to get Freddie Prinze Jr. to go sit in the dead guy's rapier so that he can make a pass at a grease monkey who is actually his boss, his new boss that he didn't know about. Oh, no. And played by Saffron Burroughs.
Embarrassing.
As Lieutenant Commander Jeanette Devereaux.
So it's very militaristic and very realistic.
Yeah, so
everyone in this movie is a lieutenant or a lieutenant. Like, there are like no ranks. There's like one captain, one commander. There's just a bunch.
There's commodores. There's admirals.
Commodores. You know, commodores. That's the band. Also, video game station thing.
Yeah, there were 64 of them. So the thing here with the things and the stuff is that he makes a butt of himself in front of her, and then he's you know, talking to Matthew Lillard. He's like, oh, it's so dumb. Matthew Lillard's like, oh, thanks, man. 5 minutes on the ship. Whatever. Then Matthew Lillard starts talking to what's her face? Rosie Forbes. Then we have
he stands on a chair and shouts and then offers some scotch to people, and then it's like, hey, we're friends now.
Yeah, until somebody mentions the dead guy, Chen, and then everybody's like, didn't exist. And then they're like, what do you mean? It was like obviously a guy's name. And then they decide to like pick a fight. And then instead of being like, oh no, you see on this ship, we decided that when somebody dies, we pretend that they never existed because that's our way of coping with it. Instead of saying that, the Australian guy's just like, I'm going to fight you now.
And by fight you, I mean, I'm going to tear your shirt so I see your necklace that tells everybody that you're a space pilgrim and we're going to be mad now because I don't like you, space pilgrim.
Oh, it's so, so painful. And then, you know, Devereaux breaks up the fight and then cut back to Jorgen Prochnow and Captain Guy, and they're watching the video, which is playing back, beginning playback, playing back. And then it's you know, that, oh, we've got this thing with the stuff. Pegasus is destroyed. Here's the other things. You need to get this thing to that thing and delay them for this thing so that we can gather these people. And they're like, oh, we should do that. And then Jorgen Prochnow is like, this was given to us by some half-breed. And it's like, okay, dial it back like 12,000 notches, Jorgen. So he's angry and he's mostly racist.
Okay, here's a ring that some old guy gave me who this ring has been in his family for 16 generations. So that must mean it's true.
But that's not his final secret identity.
So whose ring was it again, by the way?
Admiral Tallwin's something or other father thing. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But, it really doesn't.
Did Admiral Tallwin didn't die, right? Because he's...
No, but it's like a family heirloom that he passed on to this guy. It's a signet it's like, thing of his...
You're double secret, triple undercover, and someday you might have to try and convince somebody that you are who you say you are. So here, take my granddad's ring and then show that to people. Because apparently... Admiral Tolwyn just walks around when he meets all these people in the military and goes like, hey, I'm the Admiral. Look at my ring. See this ring? This is my ring.
16 yeah, well, generations. Also, the captain of the Tiger Claw is well aware of this special ring and how yeah,
exactly.
he would have, you know.
How did that happen?
It's just like, I've heard tell the tale of blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, why would that have been a thing? Like, was there a meeting? Did this go up for auction on eBay and then nobody bid on it and then it went to, you know, be a special trinket? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But
hey, Joe, if you ever get captured by a video crew and you have to prove to them that you know me, you can hang on to this T-shirt that my dad gave me that I wear sometimes. Everyone knows that this is the T-shirt I wear all the time, and my dad gave it to me. So if you have it, they'll totally believe you. And then you can direct the set.
And then do you show up a little while later and go, Paladin?
I'll show up later and be like, give me my shirt back. I like that shirt. It's really comfortable.
What if I write Paladin on the shirt?
No, don't do that, because then it'll be weird. I'll be walking around with like words on my shirt, with like Sharpie or something. That doesn't come out.
What if I get one of those inkjet transfer iron-on things?
I used to do that. I made a T-shirt in high school one time with a like foot tall image of my friend's face, just because I thought it was funny, and I wore that to school.
How did that go over?
A lot of people said, "Is that your face?" Which is weird because the kid was blonde, and I am not. And I said, "No, of course not. It's this other guy that I'm friends with that you might also know." So why are you asking me if it's me? But no, but I thought it was funny. It amused me. I kept it for a while.
Huh. Mm-hmm. That reminds me of Me, Myself, and Irene, the beginning of that movie. Anyway, so the trading barbs of, I can say the things. No, you can't because of the reasons and then whatever. And so they go off on the ship and they're going to make their way to the thing. Oh, but we can't go to the Pulsar because nobody's navigated a Pulsar except for filthy pilgrims. And it's like, I can do it. Yeah. So the
filthy pilgrims.
Yes. So the guy goes over to go to the thing and the stuff. But first they have like airplane exercises and they're all like buzzing around and they're like Spitfires or whatever. Like whatever it is.
These are not good designs for spaceships, by the way.
No, these are butt ugly. They are not attractive.
It's like if you had to design what you thought an airplane would look like for like a school project in middle school, but all you could use is stuff that you found at the dump glued together, that's what these planes look like.
Yeah.
Also, they don't have wings, basically. They're just kind of little stubby things.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And the movie is called Wing Commander. Hello.
Also, like,
what are you supposed to be commanding?
Wing Commander, the Freddy Prinze isn't even the Wing Commander. He's Commander Angel Devereaux is the commander, so he's...
Yeah, he's the wing man.
He's the wing man.
Call the movie
to the
wing
commander.
Man.
Wing man to the commander.
The wing mander.
Wing mander. It's like a salamander with wings.
Does it breathe fire still if it's a salamander, or are you talking about the non-mythical salamander?
No, I'm talking about that sort of like flat oven thing that people put their food in to finish it off on cooking shows, so it gets that nice crispy top part before they serve it.
Oh, so that way you have something that can fly over to you and you can get a crispy top on whatever it is you wanted.
Right, the winged salamander, because, you know, you want your crispy bruschetta when you're going into battle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or when you're sitting on the couch and you don't want to get up and use your salamander in your kitchen.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because it comes to you because it has wings.
Exactly.
But if it does a barrel roll, then, like, your bruschetta might fall out.
Well, it would also maybe burn or... Maybe the whole salamander would catch fire. I don't know if they're designed to really operate upside down.
Well, neither are these planes, apparently, because if you kind of sort of land a little wrong, you basically just explode and die. And then this, like, robotic truck just pushes you off the runway and you fall because you're in space, but there's gravity.
It's space falling.
They make their own gravity, which apparently extends beyond the ship into sort of the area around them. So you can fall for a little while until you're just sort of out of the way.
It's dumb.
Also, how is that her call? Wouldn't that be sort of like space sanitation's call as to how to clean up the crashed ship on the plane?
I have no idea. And also, why aren't there people who are in spacesuits who can run out onto the deck and actually help people?
How many times are they like, get a medic, and then everyone's like, I'm going to go get the medic, and there's like no medic to be found. Did they just like, everyone thought they had a medic, but they really didn't have a medic on board, but they didn't want to like say that out loud because they would totally like fail their OSHA rating or something. So they just had to say like, oh, everybody get the medic, which is code for we got to do it ourselves because we don't have a medic.
That'd be a weird code.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, they do say somebody never existed whenever they die. So maybe they are like, get the medic when they have to do first aid.
Yeah, and then the medic died forever ago, but they just didn't fill the role again because they didn't call to say the medic's dead because they don't do that.
Yeah, because if your medic never existed, you can't fill that role.
Right. Or at least the people on the other side of the galaxy don't know that you need a new medic.
Yeah, no open positions.
Right.
So,
they're not backfilling the position currently, unfortunately.
Yes, there's a hiring freeze.
Flat to down hiring in the space army, navy,
confederation, space
all, confederation
carrier fleet.
How many words can they stick together to try and come up with something that's new, but it's still the same?
Apparently two. There's Confederates and a Confederation Confederation's a word. It's not a made up word.
But it's just
slightly different from Federation.
Yeah. It's just like, well, it's a Federation, but we can't say that because then people will go like Star Trek on us. So Confederation, sure. Sure, sure.
Yeah. I mean, like the Trade Confederation in Star Wars. For example,
that's a great source to pull from because that's something that everyone loves and respects.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that was coming out this same very year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got two confederations for the price of one.
Sure, and both of those things worked out perfectly with no complaints.
Just dead silence there.
Yeah, at least they didn't have like weird. Animal alien pets things here. I mean, the bad guys were the animal alien things, not like a buddy sidekick thing.
Yeah, but nobody had a droid Dakars, so that was disappointing.
I mean, I guess Matthew Lillard's kind of a Jar Jar in this movie.
Oh, yes.
He's a dunce. He gets his girlfriend killed by being a jackass.
Everything about him is reprehensible. Mm-hmm. He has no redeeming qualities, except for when he becomes human fishing bait to try and get Freddie Prinze Jr. to hold on to him so that they can close the door thing. And then, A plus, you were an anchor on this line.
Mm-hmm. He was a piece of flesh with a hand that did not let go. But he's he's better.
Okay.
When
I think there's a market for that, but we're not going to address that.
Gross. Yeah, he's better when he sort of steers into the skid of insufferability with She's All That, where he played the horrible real world character.
Yeah, or in Scream, where he's supposed to be annoying and he succeeds.
I saw some of Scream.
You've never seen the whole movie?
I don't care for it.
Oh, really?
I didn't see it back then, and then I saw the opening bit, I don't know, within the past couple of years, and it was quite gruesome and horrifying, and I was like, well, that's not something I want to watch.
Oh. I mean, I'm not big on horror either, but it was all the rage back in the day. And
it was so much the rage. Yeah, I think we've been over this before, but like all of my friends wrote their own version of Scream style movies in like middle school / high school or whatever it was. And they were going to like make their version. And it was one of those things where everyone loved it so much. I just there's no way I could have even liked it at all.
Well, you dodged that bullet. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was a genre changing moment for the horror medium field genre thing. So that existed. And you missed it, but it's okay, because you don't need to like that category at all. And nobody's really done anything that innovative or amazing with the category since. And if you like horror movies and you don't like what I just said, then so what?
What was the innovating part, by the way?
Well, it turned the tropes of the horror movies from the 70s and 80s on its head in terms of what the expectations were for how everything unfolded and sort of the slasher, how the slasher stuff happened. Now, since then, nothing really big has changed in that genre, and everything's just sort of like a Scream version. So that's how it changed the genre, because everything tries to clone it. And it is different from what came before it.
People liked that Cabin in the Woods thing. That was supposed to be genre changing.
I never saw it.
It's fine.
It was also based on an earlier thing. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So back to this disaster piece.
Sure. Disaster piece. That's a good. Is that did you come up with that, or is that a thing?
No, I think that's a thing. Because you know, it was a lazy portmanteau that I've heard. And so they have the
you're a lazy thing portmanteau.
A lazy manteau, if you will. It reclines. So they go through the Pulsar after much protestation, and there is some bullet time. Because
right, the bullet why not? Time. We've got that camera rig from The Matrix. Let's do two quick shots where everything freezes and we move for a minute.
Yep, that effectively conveyed time.
Yeah, and then Matthew Lillard's like, "Whoa, look at me, I'm falling!" And then what's her name like hits her head and's like, "Oh, I'm bleeding."
Yeah,
medic. That's all there is to that.
So they arrive at the thing and they're like, "Oh no, there's an asteroid field. Reconnoiter that asteroid field." And you know, if you find anything, you know, make sure that you don't let them know that we're here. So they try to do that. And they have the rapiers go off and they do the thing. And then he thinks that what's-her-face, Devereaux, is compromised. And so he tries to go save her gallantly and makes a mess of the whole entire thing. And we get our first actual action in this film.
Sure, you could call it action. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, they at least shot something. Like, it was 30 minutes into this movie about space fighting, and we finally get a space fight. And so they do that little sortie, and then they skedaddle out of there back to the ship, and they're like, "Oh no, it was that thing." And then it was all these accusations that unfold. And apparently there is a flight computer that has an AI component, which cannot be queried or consulted or record any information that could possibly corroborate any of this that has occurred. But instead, you just hurl racial epithets at one another. And that is the way you handle these sorts of situations. But that unfolds, and there's the whole, like, blah, 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 my history of the thing, and I'm sorry, but I need to make sure you were safe. You messed up the thing, blah, blah, blah. It's stupid. There's a whole, like, 10 minutes of this you could just cut out of this film, because it just goes nowhere. And then they decide that they're going to go after that command and control ship, so that they can, cause a delay that will last for 2 hours. And this is when our wonderful Captain Secret Paladin Taggart is all like, oh, you shouldn't do that because they'll come after you. The Tiger Claw will be defenseless. There's nothing you'll be able to do. You shouldn't do this. You really shouldn't. And they're like, we're totally going to do it. And he's like, okay, fine. I'm going to go with them and the fighters. And so he goes over there with them and the fighters, and they get to the asteroid field, and there's supply ships. And he's like, we're going to turn around and we're going to go back to the thing. And then Devereaux's like, no, we're not. I have orders to this thing. And and she's like, you're just a civilian pilot. You can't say anything. And then he's like, aha, you think I'm just a civilian
totally
pilot
not.
Because I...
Here's my secret identity and my secret code. Look me up, bro. Google me. And she's apparently got whatever it takes to Google him right there. So the computer's he's totally
you need
right.
You need to have a copy of the database of all of the identities of all of the secret people that work for you inside of every computer, mm-hmm. so that you can just type in the word paladin and look up and see who that is. It seems like a secure system.
In this movie are pretty dreadful. So she has that ability, and yet the main ship there has no ability to, like, watch them while they're out there. Because, like, if they were watching when she was, like, trying to hide behind the asteroid and Freddie Prinze was all like, no, you're compromised, they would have been like, you're right or you're wrong. But instead they're like, is he lying or not? We don't know, because we apparently can't see a mile away into space because stuff. But then she has all the stuff.
It was supposed to be a far enough distance that they couldn't actually use their sensors, but the fact that they couldn't actually consult any sort of flight recording afterwards is bizarre. But considering he had the information provided to him by the computer, Merlin, the computer, it's just like, why didn't it just say, oh yeah, I totally told him about the things, but whatever.
Nobody's got time for computer downloads and data analysis. They just got to shoot from the hip and feel out the magnetic fields with their space DNA.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine how long it would take to decrypt a whole rapier, Merlin? That doesn't it doesn't just happen by itself.
Go on, I'm still here technically.
But it doesn't make any sense, because he didn't pull rank back when he was at the ship when he was so certain of this thing, but he pulls rank now, and it's just like, oh, he must know something that we don't know, and whatever. And it's just like, again, with the, like, quasi, maybe he's a saboteur thing, and it's like, but that doesn't actually mean anything. And then, like, why does he guess this? Nobody really knows. It's just, you know, pilgrim intuition.
No, it's there because this was a save point in the video game. And they needed something to keep people intrigued and to mix it up a little bit. And, oh, there's more depth to the story you didn't realize. But no, there's not.
No. So then they head on back to the place with the things and stuff. And they're like, oh, crap. And then back there at the ship, they're like, oh, no, bring up the shields by closing the ship and then turning the thing on. And then, you know, the Kilrathi, oh, they've got a capital ship and a battleship and 2 destroyers. We're doomed. Terrifying. This is bad. Bad moment for us. And then it's like, oh, no, we got 12 signatures coming in. It's like, oh, no, more guys. They're really going to grind us into pulp. And then it's the good guys. Surprise. No one's surprised. And there's the whole thing with the firing the torpedoes, and they look like submarine torpedoes when they fire, but semi-ballistically. It's really, I don't understand
they're doing torpedo / ICBM looking things. Which,
yeah,
sure.
Do you mean ICBMs?
That's what I said.
Yes. Well, I mean, it did run on PC DOS when the game originally came out.
Oh. Sure. Is that where this game was played?
Apparently, I couldn't play it because I had a Mac Plus and my mom had a Mac Quadra 605, which did not even have a floating point unit, Dan.
How did you survive without a floating point unit? I mean, the humanity.
Barely, really. And it only had one LC-style PDS slot. Which is a PDS slot that is very slow, very slim profile, and so that meant there was only one kind of PowerPC upgrade card that they briefly sold by Apple, where you could actually upgrade to a PowerPC system, but it wasn't actually going to do you any good because the system would still kind of suck donkey balls because it was just a daughter card with a PowerPC 100 chip on it. So what anyway? Doesn't make any sense. Don't worry about it. I couldn't play any video games when I was a kid.
How did you survive? I don't know.
I didn't. But then we had
died.
I died. Well, the only way to live is to not play PC video games where you die. So there was that. But I had diamonds. I could bounce the thing around. You ever play diamonds?
No. What is that?
That was where there was this little ball that bounced, and you could move it left or right, and then it would hit different paint squares and would paint the ball, and then the ball could get rid of squares of that color. And there were also, like, stone squares you couldn't get rid of, and it would bounce around between all those different things. They also had this on, like, TI-83s and TI-86s and whatever as cloned, like, Game Boy-ish style versions of that. Do you not play it?
I have no idea what you're talking about, so apparently I did not.
Okay, well, I played it, and so that there should have been a Diamonds movie is all I'm saying. So they have this whole thing where they're under attack, and then the fighters come in, and blah, 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 and they fire things, and they blow up stuff, and they manage to get things defeated for reasons, but they're severely damaged, so they need to get down into the crater pit, and we have the whole thing with Forbes, and Matthew Lillard is going to show off, and he's really going to show you who has balls now, because that's the recurring thing
that people were saying to each other.
It's not, it's just so dumb. And then Forbes dies, and they have the space gravity push the thing off of the thing, like you said, and then, you know, I can still see her. I'm gonna run out into vacuum of space and, like, totally rescue her.
You're not going out there, bro. I'm totally going out there, bro. You're not going out there,
no, bro.
For like 5 minutes. Where's the medic? Give me a suit. Why don't you just
terminable
go where the suits are? Like, also, why don't you keep the suits by the door?
Well, that's what I was saying. It's just like, shouldn't someone be suited up in case there is a landing accident? Like, what is? Do you think every single one of these is just going to be a total winner? Like, I don't understand, dude.
They have limited crew.
Well, it's supposed to be some wartime thing, and everybody on the ship just seems to be a bumbling moron. But they finally get it all together, land down in that crater thing, and they're in the shadow side of that crater, so nobody can see them, because that's how shadow works.
Shadows in space work.
Yeah, and then the Kelrathi battle group is passing them overhead, but they can sense the vibrations, so they stay really quiet, because otherwise the Kelrathi will be able to sense their space vibrations through the vacuum of space, because that's how the vacuum of space works. And so they sit there for like 5 minutes, I don't know, and then they're finally like, oh no, a destroyer is hunting us, sit quieter.
They're just nuking every crater trying to find us because they know we're here somewhere, which I guess, yeah, they just have lots of cat space nukes.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, cats are not the friendliest animals, Dan. And if you had a cat, it might build a nuke too. So
you might drop a space nuke on my head while I was sleeping.
Yes, but hopefully just in the litter box.
Gross. I said nuke, not Duke.
So anyway, Duke Pilgrims. We're back to the movie. Yay. So the thing here, I don't even remember exactly the details of this, but they blow up the things and get out with the stuff and do the things.
Isn't this where they like fly up and then they're like, oh no, our computer isn't working, but he's like, just get me alongside of it, and then everyone fire all the torpedoes at him because we're right next to him, and then we'll blow him up, and then hooray.
No, that's the end.
That's later.
When they, yeah. This is still the part where they're like, oh, there's a command and control ship, and that's the same one that came past us. We'll go after it in our other ships and have a boarding party formed by our best pilots.
Oh, right.
Your best pilots are good for boarding parties.
Best pilots and also capable of handling large machine guns.
Yes. Pilot Marines. So
it's like Freddie Prinze can sense the magnetic fields given off by the space cats, and he's faster at shooting them than anyone else because he's the chosen one.
Yes. No other plausible explanation exists. And
just because he's the second best pilot in the academy, he's also the second best marksman and sneaker arounder of spaceships.
Well, you can't have him be too good. You can't have him be the best guy in the academy, because that would be suspicious, Dan. You got to have him be the second best. You gotta make him an underdog.
You got to make him question his motivations and lose his confidence, because he's got a question. No, wait, that's Matthew Lillard that questions his confidence for some reason, even though Freddie Prinze is the main character, and he should be that guy.
Matthew Lillard did get somebody killed. So,
Well, he should just be, like, shot in the face, like, what's her name was trying to do. It's a punishable by death offense, and she's gonna play judge, jury, and executioner right there on the flight deck.
We should do Judge Dredd sometime, but so they
which the first one,
yeah. Oh, what do you, oh yeah, of course the first one. I haven't even seen the second one.
The second one's really good, man. I don't know. I haven't seen the first one in a long time, but boy, do I remember it not being good.
Oh, it is not good, but it is funny, not good. Cause you know, still on chatting, I am the law. Anyway, Jürgen Prochnow is also in that. Surprise.
Wait, who was the other guy? Was it Ironsides again?
No.
Who was the bad guy?
Oh, God, you got me on the spot here, Dan.
I want to say Tom Sizemore, but it's not Tom Sizemore, is it?
No, it was not him. Judge Judy. Wouldn't that be funny if Judge Judy walked around and she's just like, no, I don't believe you. I'm going to just off you. That would be hilarious.
She should shout, I am the law.
That would be funny.
Armand DeSante.
Yes.
Oh,
he was Rico.
Right. Rob Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
He gets
Max von Sydow, yeah. Diane Lane as Hershey. Remember her?
Hershey. Oh, Judge Hershey.
Yeah, that was Stallone's love interest.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh. See, I get this mixed up with Demolition Man a lot.
That's easy to do, because they both came out relatively around the same time and involved Sylvester Stallone being a space future cop. And not space, but...
Being the law. He is the law.
Yep. Three seashells. But the...
Dennis Leary. Doing monologues in the streets, covered in dirt.
I also like Demolition Man too, so I don't know. I might just have a spot in my heart for like really campy bad things.
I mean, Demolition Man knows it's stupid.
You see, yeah, that's the thing. Is like you can't have the whole thing with Taco Bell and like with a straight face and just like you know what you're doing. And with Judge Dredd, it's like it tries to take itself seriously, but it manages to fail so spectacularly that it becomes hilarious. But this Wing Commander tries to take itself seriously, but also just manages to be really uninteresting to watch.
Very cheesy and
not in a funny haha way though.
No.
It's mostly just like, oh God, what are they talking about? Because most of the time they're just talking in circles about expository nonsense, technobabble dialogue. And they're setting minor goals for things that they need to do. It is sort of, I guess, a consequence of having a video game writer where they don't have like an overarching thing that really needs to pay off as the main thing that the characters are worried about, yeah. Instead of just like putting up fires constantly.
Yeah, the problem is there's no change in tone. It's all very, very overly dramatic, whether it's the action scenes or whether it's the interpersonal dealings between two characters hanging out in a room. Talking to each other, it's all way over the top, every single bit of it, and it's grating and also not done well.
Yeah, there's just one note for this movie. And they strike it again when Freddie Prinze Jr. appeals to Devereaux to reconsider Matthew Lillard, and he's one of your best pilots and you need him up there. You're short on pilots. You can't afford to lose him now. You can't shake his confidence, because then he's not going to be a good pilot, and then we're not going to have a good pilot, and blah blah blah, blah blathering. And then it doesn't matter anyways, because they're going to go board a ship, so who needs pilots? And so they go up and they get on board the Kilrathi commanding control ship. Shoot up a bunch of cat people. He sneaks off by himself through an alien ship, which he doesn't know the layout of, which seems ill-advised.
It's because he can feel the magnetic fields and stuff, so he knows where the space cats are.
I guess, but it also doesn't make any sense in terms of radio chatter, because if they have helmets on to breathe, then they would be talking to each other constantly over the radio. So when he walks into another room, he should still be hearing the conversations of everyone else who is in the other room, because they're all on radio.
Well, they have bad line of sight technology in this world here, where they can't talk to each other from far distances. So maybe just once you're on the other side of a metal wall, the radios don't work.
Oh, okay. So they had to send a drone in order to reestablish communication.
Right. They need a drone with line of sight to both parties before they can communicate.
Yes. So he goes and he finds the nav computer AI, and he sees that they have the coordinates in there, and he knows exactly where they're going to go. And once they have this information, they can relay this information to their fleet guys, and then they can blow them out of the sky at that one point, because they're all going to pop up in the same spot.
But shouldn't they have already known where that place is that they're going to go, because the space cats are using the human navigational computer?
Well,
are we to believe that there's only one human space navigational computer?
No. But supposedly, there are different vectors where you can enter something and then pop out at a certain point around some other gravitational source, around some other sun or brown dwarf or quasar or pulsar or whatever. But they don't know which one of those they're going to pick. So the fact that they know the coordinate in the fact that they like apparently wrote it on highlighter Sharpie and were like, this is the one we're using, guys, clear enough that humans could walk in and read it. That is the thing that helps them.
Couldn't they just hang out by Earth and like wait for a ship to pop up and be like, there they are?
Yeah, but they could pop up around some other stellar body first and go blow the crap out of that. They don't necessarily know which one they're gonna pick, because it could be any gravity source and it could be any side of the sun, and so they might not be on that spot necessarily. And it's not a big deal, Dan. Don't worry about it. It's just like
the whole point of the movie.
No. But they get exact enough coordinates that they could just shoot at a spot where all of these guys are popping out.
Oh, right. Because as they come through the thing one by one, they just blow them up.
Yeah. And so this way they don't have to like have fleets fighting other fleets. They can just blow the crap out of things as they just like pop into existence.
That's efficient. That's efficiency in filmmaking. And that's smart thinking. Work smarter, not harder.
Yes. Yes. You know, get to the source of the problem. Get to the root of the problem. You don't want to let your problem rove around your solar system with their shields on. You just want to blow the crap out of them when they pop into reality. So they get that stuff, go back with the power cells to their ship. They use a converter or something, an adapter, and they plug in those power cells or stuff, and they get life support things, which weren't working before for reasons. And they get out of there from the crater. And they go off towards the thing, but they got to send the ships so they can get ahead, because the drones aren't working. So they send Freddie Prinze Jr. and Devereaux, and there's a special kind of missile which can cloak and decloak, and they have to fight
which
that
just,
thing.
Again, that's there because it's a video game, and that was probably like a boss battle where they're like, oh no, these missiles can disappear and reappear and stuff.
Perhaps. I don't know enough about that, whether or not I can confirm that, but I mean, it would have been a cool mechanic had they used that at any other point in the film, but it just felt like another thing that you were laying on top at this point. And it's just like, get to the end of this film. I don't need another like unique little quirk that you want to toss in here. We have enough layers of like weird, stressful, annoying tension garbage for the characters, not for me. I don't feel any tension because I'm bored.
There's no tension in this movie. There's a lot of garbage, though.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying when I'm saying I'm bored, but the people in the film theoretically have conflict. It doesn't mean anything to me, but they're fighting each other for things. But they go after the missile thing, and then they blow it up, but it knocks out Devereaux's thing, and then she gets in the escape pod thing with the canopy eject thing, and then she's hanging out in space, and he's like, oh no, I'll tow you back, and she's like, this is the time for it, go do the thing. He's like, oh, I don't want to do it, and he's like, you can go do it, the thing, or I'll court-martial you, and he's like, oh no, and then so he finally goes, and then this is, I believe, the part of the movie where I finally realized that Freddie Prinze Jr. basically just has his mouth open and his eyes wide most of the time. You reminded me on the Slack that he has another face. So he's a man of two faces, and I should really appreciate his acting range because I was not. And he goes to the thing, and then there's a Kilrathi command ship which pulls up behind him. It's just like, we're going to sneak up on this guy. And it's very strange because this is when we start introducing their side of the conversation, like what their bridge chatter is like, and it turns out they're all idiots because we cut in on them having their conversation where they're like, oh, he's going to go and warn them about our thing, we should go after him, and this is dialogue they had their little puppet thing say and then put fake words in the mouths of and then put subtitles on, and so it meant something significant. It wasn't just like throwaway ADR. They went through a lot of effort to put this dumb stuff in the film.
The subtitles are nice. Although, like, I find it hilarious that when they did the like introduction to the Pegasus base or whatever, they had like three lines of text on the screen explaining what the hell it was. And then I think all of the Kilrathi in this movie have like combined maybe three lines, so they don't get featured too much.
No, and so they pop through to the thing. He gets over with Merlin, and it's like, He broadcasts on everything. He's like, hey, Kilrathi, here's the coordinates. Go do the things. Guys, anybody here? And then we cut to Admiral Tallwin. It's like, oh, we totally hear him, but we can't break radio silence. And then the Kilrathi ship comes through, and then he's just like, I'm just going to drive really fast, and then I'm going to go towards this Confederate beacon. And it's, oh no, it's beacon 157. Remember from the beginning of the film? And that was the gravity well that he went into to jump to at the first start of this thing.
Oh, it was so the same one.
Yeah, it was the same beacon too, remember? And so he goes towards it, and
well, that's
he's like, Merlin,
impressive.
Tell me.
I thought he was going to like prove himself that like, okay, now I have the power to do a thing that I didn't think I had to do before, but he just did the same thing twice, so that's not impressive.
Well, except he didn't jump here. He moved to the side really fast.
Oh, right. And then, it's the thing where Matthew Lillard was going to have him killed or whatever. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and then...
I know it's dangerous, but they don't know it's dangerous, so they're just following me, and then I move out of the way.
It's really bizarrely stupid, because they made the gravity well this really bright object that fills the entire screen, and so when the Kilrathi are talking about it, they're like, this must be a Confederate beacon that will take him to his fleet. We should go after it. And then it's just a big bright white light thing that fills the whole area of space. And you're just like, that's not a fleet, guys. Like, are you not? Maybe their vision isn't very good. But so they go towards it. And then at the last minute, they're like, oh, no, he tricked us. This is not the fleet. It's like this. What? Like, of all of the ways to give us some sort of insight into these other enemies, and what you do is you basically just have them just show up there and be like, we're gonna chase this guy, oh, he's going towards that thing, we're gonna follow him because it must be that thing, oh no, it wasn't that thing, we're all dead. that was all your...
They're cats, they're not super bright, there's a reason they didn't agree to be friends with humans. It's not because they love war, it's just that they're very stupid.
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't know why Earth just doesn't give them Meowmix and call it a day. But so
because they don't want the Meowmix, they want the Fancy Feast, and you know there's only so much Fancy Feast to go around.
What was the other one? Sheba or whatever.
That sounds like something.
No, remember the one? Oh, was it? No, Caesar's the one for the dogs. But anyway, there was that. Remember that commercial where they would have the like the crystal cut cocktail glass that they'd bring out for the fluffy Persian cat,
that,
and they'd have.
I thought that was a Fancy Feast.
No, I thought Fancy Feast was they're in the can. They're not in the like the container that flips the thing. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Neither of us have cats, nor do we care. So cat owners, don't write us in. So they conquer the day, they save the things. Admiral Tallwin's happy, and Freddie Prinze Jr. gets brought back, and then they're like, oh no, and then the paladin, he went and he did the thing and he got the person, and who knows if she's still alive, and then you know, medic, and then there's a guy who shows up.
He saved her, even though she turned her beacon off to hide from the bad guy. So it's sheer luck that we found her out there in the space. And then Freddie Prinze, he shouts, "Don't you die on me!"
Yeah, and it's Chris Roberts who wrote and directed, and yeah.
Oh wait, that's right. He's in it somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the search and rescue guy, is what he's credited it as.
Right.
There he is. And so there. Ta-da!
Yeah, it just literally cuts to credits that quickly.
Yeah, and a David Arnold theme song goes. Yeah,
who did the music for this movie?
David Arnold, and I think they had some pop music they jammed in here somewhere. I don't know.
Did he do other things?
David Arnold did Stargate, Independence Day, the James Bond, GoldenEye, through all the Brosnan Bonds, and then I can't remember if he did Casino Royale or not, but I think he did, because I think Thomas Newman only came on with What's-His-Face when he came on to direct with the last two.
Well, this one's bad.
The score?
All of it, but yeah, I didn't enjoy the score. I think there's like two songs, and then...
It's basically just like one big theme. Oh, here we go. I found it. It's David Arnold theme credit. Kevin Kinner is credited with the score. So all of the filler music that you hear is Kevin Kinner. And then the, like, I assume opening and closing credits is David Arnold.
I don't know that other guy either.
Yeah. Well, David Arnold is actually can do good things. this is not a good thing, but yeah.
Wing Commander.
So was this like your favorite movie ever?
No, I'm not sure that this is really a movie.
Do you know what the budget was?
I believe I saw something in the vicinity of $30 million.
Yes. $30 million in 1999 dollars.
I saw the second credit in the credits was special visual effects.
Yes, by...
Something with the D? It was two words.
Digital Anvil.
Digital Anvil.
Which was Chris Roberts' video game company.
Oh, so the effects were done by the video game company.
Yes.
That makes sense. I mean,
yeah,
it doesn't make sense, but it explains a few things. Because video games and movies are basically the same thing, right?
It's the same thing. I mean, you know, people have been saying that for years. You know, just get the Unreal Engine and then you can make a movie. Remember when Digital Domain had that brief flirtation with that ideal of how they were just going to use video game engines to make things?
I don't remember that at all. What did they use it for?
It never went into production as far as I know for anything, but it was something they had bandied about. That was in the end of the texture era, so.
It's good. You save money.
Yeah. You save money and you make bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That'll never never go badly. It's a great business plan.
Mm-hmm. As long as you're saving money, you can only make good choices, and you will only generate profit. Because you cut costs. So that means profit.
Sure. More for us.
Yes. Do you want to know an interesting fact?
I would love to know an interesting fact.
Principal photography took place in Luxembourg.
Why?
I don't know. That is an interesting question, isn't it? I don't think I've ever seen a movie who had principal photography take place in Luxembourg.
All of it? Or was it just like...
Yeah, apparently, principal photography took place in Luxembourg and post-production was done in Austin, Texas. So,
look at that, Luxembourg.
Huh. Yeah, it's a place.
The hangar scenes, yeah.
It's not like they were on a... They weren't on like a planet or anything. Like they were just indoors.
What did they need for this? They needed the hangar, like a bedroom or two, the control room, and then they needed a big blue screen with a gimbal for the ugly trash spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yep.
Most of the time, I say this movie was bad, but I enjoy having seen it. Because now I've seen it, but this one I can't say that about.
Nope. Do you have any regrets about suggesting this film?
Yeah, my life would have been just fine if I hadn't seen this movie or this movie didn't exist. The world would be fine without this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although it really wouldn't. Where would Freddie Prinze Jr. be without this film?
Probably still in high school. I mean, playing somebody still in high school.
No. That was one of the most disappointing things when his new cookbook came out and I saw the photo. It's just like, oh my God.
He got old.
Well, not only did he get old, but that just makes me think, oh my God, I'm so old. I'm not necessarily hating on him, but I'm just like, oh wow, it's a sign of my mortality, looking at this cookbook.
What is it about a cookbook that makes you feel old? Like, you can write a cookbook, Anybody can write a cookbook. No,
just the photo of him made me feel old. I have no idea what's contained inside the recipes. Old. Yeah, I don't think he has, like, tips on Epsom salts or anything, but it's, his favorite kinds of ways of keeping skin from forming on top of chocolate pudding, but, He hasn't really done a whole heck of a lot, but, in the past, like, 10 years, basically.
Oh, I see your concern. It's because his hair is gray on the sides.
Well, he's all, like, wrinkly and squinty and stuff.
Yeah, but he's always been that way.
Yeah, I mean, not as wrinkly.
It's a lot of salt and pepper hair. And here's a photo on Google Images of him walking around with a large tray of... I don't know. It looks like he just cut a couple of zucchini in half, and then there might be some red peppers.
Well, there was a time where he could have cut my zucchini in half, but it's not going to happen anymore.
Joseph.
Are we done with this episode now?
Yeah, we're done. I think the FCC is going to kick us off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear.
When I need you, I just close my eyes and I'm with
Sheba. Delicious pieces of meat, chosen and prepared with tender, loving care.
It's only a heartbeat away.
Good taste is easy to recognize in music, fine art. And, of course, the finest food. Fancy Feast Gourmet Cat Food in a single serving can. Like all fine food, with Fancy Feast you can tell just by looking how moist and delicious it is, how good it will taste. With Fancy Feast Gourmet Cat Food, good taste is easy to recognize.